It's the 2012 Awards Floptacular, where all of Hollywood's dimmest stars come out to shine.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin. I said that the way you say Stuart Wellington.
It's pretty good.
Hey. Hey, it's the traditionally cursed
episode.
Don't
say hey to us.
What?
Treat us like human beings. We're not animals.
Hey, would you like some of this hay, Elliot?
Hey. Yes, I guess I am an animal. I enjoy eating hay, so.
Because you're a ruminant.
What?
You eat it, and it goes into one of your
well,
four
I
stomachs.
I have a wife. I hardly call her a roommate. we live in the same place, but...
Okay, this is the worst who's on first ever. No, I was just saying that this is our...
Four stomachs. Four stomachs.
I thought that my four stomachs material was going to kill you guys, but no. This is our awards floptacular episode.
Okay.
Now, what's that mean?
It means that it's the one episode a year... Where we don't watch a movie beforehand. We
Any
just talk about the awards, the Academy Awards.
What awards would those be?
The Academy Awards of the Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
Oscars.
Oh, yeah, the Grouchies.
No.
The awards given out by Oscar the Grouch for best garbage.
The Grimsbys. So, and we're also recording this on a leap day, so there's a good chance that it'll get
crazy.
Sucked into a portal of time.
I don't know why that would happen.
Because don't these things only happen on grand conjunctions or something?
I don't. Just once every 4 years.
Oh, okay. Now, what it means?
Grand conjunctivitis is what you're thinking of.
What it means actually, Stuart, is that because your apprenticeship was set to end with this podcast, you're actually forced to do this podcast for another 4 years.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
My Sorcerer's Apprenticeship.
Yeah.
That's a movie we watched for the Flophouse earlier this year,
a
guys.
A callback to all our listeners.
We'll do some other callbacks later on in the show.
Yep, and some back calls and some cock balls. That's, you take callback and you move the ALL and the CK. Why? Does it mean something else?
Not that I can think of.
Okay.
So,
good.
The Oscars. NASCAR's
highest
honor.
I tell by our rambling that it was a really exciting broadcast.
Was it? There was
music,
singing.
Billy Crystal sang that stupid song he sings every year.
I mean, that's already
acrobatics.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I was already concerned that it was going to be boring when I saw that Billy Crystal was hosting. No offense to Billy Crystal, he's just done it a lot.
No, that is the only way Billy Crystal
been
can
boring,
take that is with offense.
You mean? He's done
Whoa,
that.
Whoa! Low blow. Low blow. He is an octogenarian who
has
put in his time. No, he's not. But.
He's shticky. I'll say that for him.
He's, yeah, like that product they sell on TV that cleans up cat hair. It's called shticky. It was probably the most boring Oscars I can remember seeing. And it's a big. Let's just get this out of the way. Every year, everyone says that was the worst Oscars ever. Every year.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
this is the first time I agree with them.
Yeah. Last year, everyone was like, this was the worst Oscars ever. Anne Hathaway and James Franco. How awkward.
I could use a double dose of Franco and Anne Hathaway.
Yeah. Last year, it was an Oscars where I was like, this didn't totally work, but they tried some different things. At least it had some kind of energy, even if it was nervous energy.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, it was like on autopilot. It was just like, get Billy Crystal, insert the Oscars disc so he can run that program. Mm-hmm. And then everyone else, the same old stars, just walk out and do whatever. Like
and
last,
let's keep this moving as quickly as possible.
Let's keep it moving unless we're having a montage of actors talking to the camera about how great movies are.
Or worse yet, that opening montage, which was just like, these are the most montaged scenes of the past
years. Like, movies are great, huh?
Yeah.
Here's a little reminder. And then it's like, we're going to need a bigger boat. Give him an offer he can't refuse.
King of the world.
Yeah, king of the world.
Life is like a box of chocolates.
It's like, it was almost like Keanu Reeves in The Matrix. Like, instead of teaching him kung fu, they were like, by the way, here's a quick history of all the movies that beat box office records over the past 20 years. And they just shoved those scenes in his head.
That reminds me, they've been advertising the upcoming Titanic release in 3D.
Yeah.
And the commercials say, from the director of Avatar. So they're using the like the biggest grossing movie of all time to promote the second biggest grossing movie
of all
time. Yeah,
well, because there's a generation of young, like teenage girls and boys, I assume, but mostly girls, who would want to see it, but who don't know James Cameron
that
don't know the old
Blue
Titanic.
Blue Aliens and Fern Gully and shit. And they're like, teach me about history. Teach me about boat sinking.
Mm-hmm. Teach me about hearts and how they go on.
Yeah. And about posing for nude pictures in the back of old-timey cars.
If it introduces a new generation to Billy Zane, I'm all for it. Because you know what? He's struggling a little right now, guys.
Yeah.
Zane's. No offense.
He is. He's not doing... This is not the age of Zane. Let's just say that.
Nice.
It was just an autopilot Oscars. Like, super dull and super rote. And it was like... These big stars would walk out and it's like, Tom Cruise, Angelina Jolie, like, okay, like Robert Downey Jr. I feel like these are the same stars we see all the time in the movies, not television. And one of the things that was most exciting to me last year was when Kirk Douglas came out and like everyone was like, oh, he looks so old. Why is he on television?
Yeah,
and
like let Mumra out of his tomb.
Shouldn't he be fighting Lion-O? But
that was me, and I was complaining the whole time.
Really? Well, you did think it was Mumra.
I was like, is that a Skeksis? Is this a thing for Jim Henson? What's going on?
But, like, it was very exciting to me, at least, and I assume to old people, to see, like...
Like you.
Yeah, like me. People who are old at heart. To see, like, an old star who is genuinely iconic and you don't see that much anymore. Like, he hasn't done movies since... What was his last one? Like, Diamonds, whatever it was called? The movie he made with, Dan Aykroyd?
Yeah,
and
there's the one he made with
Jenny McCarthy,
with, Michael Douglas too.
Maybe that was Diamonds.
And he hasn't been in the tabloids lately for all his partying.
No, well, because he's been recovering over the past number of years from a stroke. But so he hasn't been having like stroke parties. But where I guess you
is
invite,
that a thing?
You invite the strokes to play, and but like
wow, you do stroke parties a lot different than the way I do stroke parties.
But it was really
usually it's a party of one.
But there was something that seemed
waiter party of one, please.
Masturbating party of one.
Yeah. You'll need to come by later on with your rag.
I can't believe you do that. See, you have a perfectly good cat in your apartment. Why don't you just entice it over?
Thank you, Stuart, for taking the heat off of me.
Gross. So anyway, what I was saying about Kirk Douglas was there was something special about it. Like, it's not someone you see a lot. And on Mark Evanier's blog, he was talking about how like they needed what they could have like switched up the presenters, like have Somebody you don't see a lot come out, and I think what he suggests, like Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner come out and present something, or like Roger Ebert comes out and presents something with his like computer program voice, like something that would make it feel like a special event, like they're pulling out the stops and things you wouldn't normally see. You know.
Well, speaking of the elderly, can I talk about the two things that
more about Billy Crystal?
Yeah. Well,
okay.
No, can I talk about the two things that actively angered me about this thing this year? Number one,
it went on way too long.
No, the opposite.
Way
of that.
Past your bedtime.
The opposite.
Well, once again, they snubbed Abe Vigoda.
In the interests of speed, I guess, or maybe just trying to keep people young, they yet again shunted off the lifetime achievement honorary stuff.
Yeah, to a pre-tape.
To a pre-tape thing. So you just get like quick snippets of like James Earl Jones and what like the. Who's
Dick
the,
Smith,
Dick
right?
Smith, the
makeup artist.
Makeup artist. Like,
well, you'd think they'd at least they'd want Oprah on the primetime cast. But instead they didn't. But like, how much more exciting would it have been to have James Earl Jones, who hasn't done a movie in forever, to have him give a speech than to have, like, I don't know, who talked in the thing? Like Gwyneth Paltrow? Mm-hmm. You know? To have
Cameron Diaz and J-Lo.
Cameron Diaz and J-Lo just sticking their butts at the camera?
Presented to us like bonobos. So that was... a thing, but also
I didn't pay attention during that.
So
part.
That angered me.
Really, the part with about women's butts didn't you didn't
yeah,
pay attention
I was,
to?
You didn't pay attention. Was, you didn't.
I missed that part.
But that was also like, the part where people were arguing over whether there was a nip slip on the internet.
Oh no! I paid attention to that part.
So
I didn't
what
see the
you
part.
Saw was you were so busy investigating the nip slip.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was quickly live blogging.
Do your eyeballs
you
they shut blind. Off when like the posterior is pushed?
Yeah, of course it goes. Forth. I start playing old timey movies in the back of my head.
old-timey movies?
Old-timey movies. Like Goonies and...
Oh, old-timey, yeah.
Star Wars.
Yeah,
Episode 1, The Phantom Menace.
The classics.
In 3D.
The canonical classics.
Sure.
But that angered
me. Dreamscape.
Dream Quest.
Dreamscape.
Ice Pirates. All the best movies.
Krull.
Cloak and Dagger.
Now we're just naming movies, guys.
The Falcon and the Snowman.
Sure. Flight of the Navigator.
Flesh and Games. Baby Legend of the Lost Dinosaur.
That's actually a movie.
Secret of Nim.
It's called Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim.
No, it's not. The movie's called Secret of Nim.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Secret of Nim. Don Bluth. Ruining the titles of our classics.
So, yeah, classics like The Pebble and the Penguin and Rocket.
And Gnome in Central Park and Balto.
So, I agree with you. I think they could have... It felt a little bit like the first time I went into a movie theater and I went in expecting to see, like, the movie trivia and actually have trivia.
Interesting trivia that you might not get.
And instead, it was all just commercials for movies that are about to be released or currently in theaters.
Or TNT shows.
Yeah. And that's kind of how it felt. Like, it felt like everybody that went up there was either had been doing stuff very consistently or was super famous or had a movie to plug. And
yeah.
But also, I mean, like, you talk about, Elliot, how, like, the Oscars are really just an advertisement for movies.
Yeah.
And they're advertising it in, like, the most rote, cheap way. They're devaluing movies by putting, like, a slap of, like, gold paint over the movies rather than having it, like, gilded all the way through.
Yeah, well,
like, if they honored the actual idea of there being a history to the movies, that's more of a idea of true glamour, I feel like.
But
and to present the next award, Ben Stiller and a can of Pepsi.
You are delicious, Pepsi.
Although...
And affordable.
Ben Stiller and Emma Stone was one of the few times I genuinely laughed at something that was happening. Because Emma Stone was really selling.
It went on for a long time.
Yeah, but she seemed to genuinely, like, she cared about the bit that she was doing. Like, everyone else, like, was selling out the bits, and, like, the bits are terrible, that's all. But she managed to almost make that work through the force of...
And she's
got a pair of stones.
She's pretty girl next door, see? I mean...
Who did you live next door to? Emma Stone,
super
I guess.
Hot, super hot, cool girl.
Yeah.
The other thing
who fought zombies.
The other thing that bothered me, though, was along the same lines, was the In Memoriam. Like, the In Memoriam looked like it was made on, like, an old MacBook. Like, you know, it was just like...
Oh, MacBook Pro.
Yeah, but it was just white fade-ins and fade-out of pictures. Like, it was like halfway through before they showed any film clips at all. And there were very few film clips.
I mean, they had a lot of people in that listing that were not actors.
And maybe they're trying to expand that so it's not
and
so
that's the
actor-focused,
thing.
The
content of it,
but
there were a lot more people who worked in the technical side of movies, which is something I appreciated.
But you can still show some of their work. I mean, that's the thing. Like, if you
I guess
care,
so.
Like,
that's
if
true.
If you care about what
and
their
least,
work was,
at least
like,
helps
show
to
that.
Teach people who don't know who those people are what they did. But I was just so, like, I was just so happy that they ended on Elizabeth Taylor and not Whitney Houston.
Now, on
you know,
that's
subject.
Fine. But as far as I'm concerned, the best part of In Memoriam is like you take a walk through people's work. Like people who have left us, like this is the actual work they did.
Like in Rocky Balboa, how he walks through his memories.
Yeah. But this is why we're honoring these people. This is why we're remembering them. They did these things.
But that's that section, and I agree with you. I would love it if the whole show was. I would love it if that was sprinkled throughout the show and it was just.
If the whole show was
award,
just death,
obituary.
Death, death.
Award, obituary. But to them, that is a. Just an obligatory thing they
but
have
no,
to
but,
get
but,
through.
But that is the thing that like everyone every year actually cares about. Like that is one part of the Oscar ceremony that people or viewers actually care about. Like whether they care about it like in the way that like you might care about it, you're like, okay, this is like movie history, or they just care about it just like who's gonna be in this year?
I mean,
you
that's
know, like
what,
where are they gonna end on?
I think
what,
you
like,
hit it when you said that's what reviewers care about. But they're not trying to get reviewers, they're trying to get audience members because
trying to get butts in the seats.
Exactly, because the problem with the
Those
Oscars...
butts are already in the seats, Stuart.
The problem,
I mean, like, they're honored to be there.
The problem with... But the home butts.
Okay.
Home the problem butts, with home the Oscars...
That's a great, great movie, by the way. Home butts.
The problem with the Oscars, as with the Emmys, is that these are not real award ceremonies. These are television programs.
Whoa. Emmy winner Elliot Kalin. This is the Emmys.
Now that I have two of them, I can tell you it's all fake. But these are treated like television shows that happen to be about awards being given out.
Mm-hmm.
And the important thing to them is not we're going to really honor the people who won tonight. We're going to honor this industry. It is we got to put together an Oscars that finally gets big ratings and that draws eyeballs and interests young people. And it's treated like a competitive television program.
It does get good enough ratings. Like, that's the thing.
It gets good enough ratings that they haven't yet canceled it. But it doesn't get the ratings it got in the 70s or the
80s. But it's never going to. Like, nothing on television is.
But they want it to.
But nothing on television is.
And frankly, at this point, it doesn't get the ratings that it needs to justify the money spent on it by networks is part of it. Like, to carry the Oscars or the Emmys used to be, like, a big thing. Like, we got it this year. And now it's just like, oh, shit, it's our turn, I guess. Well, all right, we'll run this turd. You know, we'll make it happen.
It's going to smell no matter what.
It's going to stink. We'll just hold our noses and just put Billy Crystal out there and hope everyone forgets about it by next year.
All right. Well, now that I've vented my spleen a little, like, you guys can talk about something that's
actually
funny.
I was going to say those vents are beautiful. Did you get those done recently?
Yeah, I mean,
because I've been looking into spleen vents, and they're very expensive.
The thing is to, like, recess them so you don't really see them from the outside. Like,
yeah, I had to look very closely.
That's expensive BioWare. Mm-hmm. So on like the subject of
existence.
What? On the subject of Whitney Houston, I was arguing with my buddies in the
army.
Yeah, in the video game chat rooms. just kidding. But I was
just
arguing.
Kidding. They're message boards.
Yeah. I was arguing. So, I mean, she died right in 2012.
She died right.
Like, there's a woman like who's been died. Calling me saying she's Whitney Houston, and everyone thinks she's dead, but she's not.
I didn't think her death fell within the Oscars category window.
They always get the deaths aren't by the same deadlines that the movie nominees are.
Okay,
always get in trouble.
It's not
because
like people need to die for a week in L.A. just to qualify for the Oscars.
And every year, nice one.
Sure.
And every year they get shat on by somebody for forgetting someone who died like right before the awards. Mm-hmm. So I think they just err
like
on the side.
Like when they forgot Sarah Marshall, that was terrible. She died. She was not on.
That
honored.
Was a movie. It's the name of a movie, Elliot.
Dying Sarah Marshall.
Yes. Yep. Okay, well, I guess I lost the argument. Noob Slayer 27, mm-hmm. I owe you a Mountain Dew.
Noob Slayer 28, I still stand by my point. Sure. But it hurt that this was an Oscars where a lot of the movies were not big movies. Mm-hmm. Like, there were no
Avatars.
There were no Avatars. Titanics. There were no Lords of the Ringses. There were no Tights and Annex. There were no
Inceptions.
There were no Inceptions. No Dark Knights.
Keep it up.
I'll add letters into all sorts of words. Like, yeah.
You make fun of me for reciting song lyrics as if they're jokes.
I'm just inserting extra letters into words.
Okay, so we've talked.
Look, we're none of us perfect.
We've talked enough about the telecast. Should we talk about nominees?
Well, that's what I was getting into. That's what I was getting into.
I'll tell you something. Rise of the Planet of the Apes should have won Best Visual Effects.
Hey, let's all say. I'm not sure I agree, but let's all say one positive thing about the Oscar telecast to kind of clear the air before we get to the nominees section.
Clear that.
And I'll start.
Smell out of the way.
I liked the Christopher Guest bit until it went too long.
Yeah.
And I thought.
I
thought
a qualified compliment.
And I thought Fred Willard was very funny.
I liked it. For some reason, it was less funny to me hearing the audience laugh. Like, it was as if there was a laugh track to it. But I liked the bit.
I can understand
in general.
That I thought it was. I liked the idea. I didn't think it really fit. There was no the subject of that bit was totally inconsequential and had nothing to do with the rest of the. Hey, you know these focus groups? We've all dealt with them. Here's a little bit about focus groups in the 30s.
It's yeah.
Like, all right. Is this not supposed to seem relevant? But I liked the idea of doing that kind of a bit.
I'll say that in addition to, as I said before, enjoying Young Miss Emma Stone.
The Young Miss Emma Stone Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
Practices CGI techniques before the
before he puts them in movies. Yeah.
I didn't like the whole bit of like what are they thinking, but I did like the end where they just cut to Nick Nolte and he's like,
yeah,
and Nick Nolte was red faced and laughing as if he was going to have a stroke right there.
I did like
being too gravelly.
I did like the interview with Nick Nolte on the red carpet where they asked him if he owned a crow, and he didn't know what they were talking about for a minute or two before he admitted that he does, in fact, own a crow.
A crow like the bird?
Yeah, the bird, yeah. He got it from the movie.
Is he a maester?
U-turn. Yeah. Oh. Yep.
Is the I thought you were gonna say, Dan, that you liked Why can I not remember his name? The winner for Best Supporting Actor, his speech. Christopher Plummer.
Christopher Plummer was great, too.
Christopher Plummer's speech. That was the high point of the night for me.
No, he was... we were talking about this at work. Like, that's what the Oscars should be. It should be graceful old men...
It should be hot young women showing off their gams and making jokes, and graceful old Englishmen.
Yeah, being charming. Well, he's from Canada.
Oh, that's right. He's Canadian.
When I accidentally tweeted that he was English, or not accidentally, I tweeted that he was English because he sounds like he's English, but he's Canadian.
And you got dick slapped.
I got slapped by Christopher Plummer.
I fact checked myself.
Oh, okay.
Because I was like,
He checked his faxes, and it was one for Christopher Plummer saying, "Here's my birth certificate, just so you can say I'm Canadian, Donald Sutherland."
I appreciate the tweet, but I am a Canadian gentleman.
And I think one of the things that did also bugged me about the awards was it felt like there was this feeling of like, finally, Meryl Streep has gotten her due. She's finally won an Academy Award for all this great work. And it's like, she has two already. And it's like widely regarded that she's like the best actress around.
What did
like,
she have it for? She has one for Sophie's Choice
and one, and she has a supporting actress one for Kramer versus Kramer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Stuart.
And she is nominated almost every year.
She's nominated almost every year.
Even when she's in doubt and doesn't deserve it.
Whoa. Yeah. So, like, this idea, it felt like this idea that, like, and maybe they were just trying to spin it so that people weren't mad that Viola Davis didn't win, but it seemed like they were trying to put this spin on of, like, finally, Hollywood has recognized the eternally unrecognized Meryl Streep.
I will say
it's like, there's not Susan Lucci
here. Say on her behalf, though, that she is almost the female equivalent of Christopher Plummer in that she always has a very, like, funny and graceful
speech. Well, no, she's a class act. Yeah. But...
Yeah, I have nothing against her.
It's not against her, that I have. It's just against this, like, it was somewhere in the intro for her, it was like, she's been nominated all these many times since the 80s, and she's never won. It's like, she has two. Like, and her reputation and her legacy are secure. There are a lot of people who are...
She is the actress that every other actress pretty much wishes they were. Like, yeah. Have a career that's spanned this much time, especially for an actress, is really challenging.
Yeah, and there are actresses like Rachel Weisz, who I like a lot, who at some point may be totally forgotten, except for the fact that she has an Academy Award, whereas Meryl Streep is not going to be forgotten. Like, her body of work will last on longer than probably any other actress working today.
Luckily, movies like Dreamhouse come along to give Rachel Weisz a little bit of work.
To really cement them.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But anyway, the nominees we're going to talk about. So I said, let's say one thing nice, and then I started complaining about a bunch of shit. So
because I bring it up if only because there were a lot. There was a fair amount of dissent about the choices. There was
no
a lot
nominations
of
for The Descent.
Yep. Well, that was a few years ago.
Well, no, that's
nothing for best blind cannibal cave dwellers.
Let's backtrack a bit, Elliot. What would you have had win best visual effects if not?
Oh, either Rise of Planets or Tree of Life.
Okay.
Tree of Life. The creation of the universe sequences in Tree of Life were beautiful, and also you could tell done with practical effects. Yeah. They looked real, and a lot of those effects were like pouring liquids through other liquids and shooting it at the right speed so it looked like clouds of stars and space dust.
No, that was an amazing sequence.
It was fantastic. And as much as Rise of the Planet of the Apes was really good visually, I felt a lot of that was acting and not necessarily the effects. Because the apes did not look like real apes.
We can agree that, like, Hugo winning in that category is weird bandwagon.
It's ludicrous. I mean, Hugo winning in cinematography is ludicrous also.
Opposed to Tree of Life.
As opposed to Tree of Life, definitely, but even like a movie like Drive, which was not nominated, you know.
Yeah.
Like, Tree of Life was a beautiful movie that was made almost entirely, except for like the dinosaurs and some things, with objects that exist in the real world. And I feel like a lot of the art of a cinematographer is taking reality and showing it in a different way. And Hugo is almost nothing in that movie is real, you know.
Yeah.
And there's so many shots of like the camera flying really fast into and out of buildings.
Wit.
Well, that's the thing. Sacha Baron Cohen is really good in that movie. Like, I would have rather seen him be nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Hugo than like Jonah Hill for Moneyball. You know?
Yeah, but you hate Jonah Hill.
I don't hate him. I just don't like him.
Okay, fair enough.
He's all right, I guess.
I mean, I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah.
What, that I hate Jonah Hill? Because
no,
I don't.
That Sacha Baron Cohen deserved a nomination.
I feel like he brought a lot out of what could have been a very flat character or very one-dimensional character. And like his, especially considering Borat and Bruno, like his acting in Hugo is so expertly like modulated and like,
yeah, he's still
shaded.
A very eccentric, over the top character, but it's a believable human version of
that. Yeah, and he doesn't rely on like catchphrases or, you know, the kind of crutches he has in
no,
Bruno.
I think he's fantastic in that. I think he's great in Sweeney Todd. Like,
yeah,
if
he is
I,
good
if
in Sweeney
I had
Todd.
My
brothers,
yeah, if I had my way.
That's my nickname for the movie, Brothers.
Brothers.
Smothers Druthers.
If I had my Elliot's nickname for the movie Brothers, I would see Sacha Baron Cohen in those sort of Peter Sellers supporting roles in movies.
So that you could watch a ton of movies 30 years from now that are not very good, but Peter Sellers is in them?
Man, I tried to watch speaking of Christopher Plummer, I tried to watch the Pink Panther movie that he's in.
That's a good one.
Which is one of the good ones.
Yeah, that's the third one. That's a good one.
And I still like
I think it's the third one.
It's like 15 minutes before Peter Sellers shows up at the beginning of the movie, and then just any scene that he is not in is death. Like,
I don't know about
he's still,
death, but it's not. He's the only thing that holds it together.
That movie is so slow. Like, that's the weird thing about like. Not just that movie, but I feel like a lot of comedies of that era. It's just like,
yeah,
okay, we're gonna have one comedic element of that, and then there's just gonna be like a regular movie, around it. But we're not gonna make that movie as good because this is a comedy. So you're just gonna have to wait for that one funny guy to show up again.
I mean, that was basically '60s comedies, yeah. But Peter Sellers made a lot of movies like Smallest Show on Earth and Heavens Above or whatever it's called, where it's like you're watching, and you're like. Why is this even a movie? Like, what? Like, I'm glad Peter Sellers was getting a paycheck, and I like this character he's playing, but, like, yeah, there's no movie here. There's, like, nothing going on.
Well, best to go back to Best Supporting Actor, that was a category that there was a fair amount of contention because both Albert Brooks
was not
probably
nominated.
Should have been nominated.
He should have been nominated, yeah.
And I would argue I really like Patton Oswalt's performance
in Young
Adult.
He was good in that, too.
Those were too widely. How do you feel about those snubs?
I mean,
Dan?
I was going to talk. You can talk, Dan.
Who all got nominated? We got Nick Nolte,
Christopher Plummer,
Jonah Hill,
Brad Pitt.
No, that was for Best Actor.
I thought he got nominated for Best Supporting for Tree of Life.
Did he?
Maybe.
I know that what's his face? Max von Sydow, Dad.
Max von Sydow should
not have been nominated. I can say. With authority, without having seen that movie.
Oh, I have seen it, and he is the best thing in the movie.
What's this?
Yeah. But he was nominated for Extremely Loud and Incredibly Crappy.
Oh, yeah.
And he is the best thing in that movie, but
I feel
like that was a career nomination.
Didn't
like,
he win
Max von Sydow
for Strange Brew? For best,
yeah, I think he did.
Best villain.
Oh, you know what? He won best actor
award.
For Needful Things. That's what it was. Yeah.
You're thinking of Mel. You're thinking of Mel Blanc's nomination for Strange Brew for their unseen father.
I think that was. I feel a career nomination. He's in his 80s. He's one of the kind of towering actors of world film from his work with Ingmar Bergman. So like, they were like, yeah, we'll throw him in. But he is the best acting in that movie. But that's probably because he's not in a lot of it. And most of the movie is dominated by an irritating kid.
Yeah. I mean, I think that...
They should have nominated the dog from The Artist.
I think that Albert Brooks, liked to have seen him in there.
Albert Brooks definitely should have been. And I liked Patton Oswalt's performance in Young Adult, but Albert Brooks' performance in Drive, again, like there's so much... in that performance and he does it in a way that always feels real the entire time.
Yeah.
Like he's the most not being the hero of the movie, he's the most real and like most sympathetic character in the whole movie, I feel like.
Yes.
And he draws that out of it. Like it's not necessarily written that way. It's written that way, but he draws a lot out of it.
Any other gripes with the categories, guys?
What were we talking about? Other nominees or
other snubs?
Snubs.
You thought there were snubs or I don't want like it's such a boring. It is really such a boring.
To be
Oscar
honest,
year.
I gotta admit I have not seen. I did not see that many of the Best Picture nominees.
I saw a fair number of them.
I didn't get around to see War Horse because I don't like seeing
War
animals
Horse.
In danger.
That's why
I like
you
seeing
that's
people
why,
in danger.
That's
all
why
the
you
time.
You had to leave the Rescuers Down Under. in the middle of the film.
Yeah, of course. And arachnophobia. I'm like, what are they going to do to those spiders?
Elliot's
this is like a spider holocaust.
Yeah. Stuart still doesn't know if those rescuers ever got back up above after being down under.
Yeah.
And Five Head Goes West. Couldn't watch it. Even anthropomorphic, you know. I didn't see that. Guys, I know you think that the artist is like, that's right up my alley. I did not see that.
I know you love silent films. Mm-hmm. You love French movies. Mm-hmm. You're a huge fan of movies where James Cromwell plays a butler.
Yep.
These are all right up your alley.
I did not have a lot of passion about like going to see a lot of these nominated films. Like, I still haven't seen The Artist. I think I would probably enjoy it.
I think you'd enjoy The Artist.
But
The Artist
I get the impression that I would not love it.
It's a pretty middle-of-the-road movie in a lot of ways. I liked it a lot, but it was not one of the movies that I saw it and then it stuck with me afterwards. Tree of Life, I saw, and it really stuck with me. Midnight in Paris really stuck with me. Planet of the Apes stuck with me more than The Artist did. Like, The Artist and Hugo really stuck with me. Like, The Artist is a fun movie, and it's a really well-made movie, but it's not, there's not a lot of things there. Like, it's a very thin movie, you know? And it's a movie where, I don't need to spoil things.
Sure.
So it's a silent movie star. They tell him, you're going to have to make sound films. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do it. And then his life falls apart. And the whole movie, you're like, it's almost like the movie forgets that the main character could at any point decide to just change his career a little bit and everything would be fine. Like,
yeah, the problems are of his own making.
He makes them himself. Yeah.
Like in the movie Hugo, where the problem is that everyone's just,
he makes like a robot
not
or some shit, right?
To each other, and they're just grumping around and never asking anyone for help.
Yeah, you're right. That was Hugo. The problem in Hugo, yeah.
And my wife,
I like Hugo. I just didn't like it as much as you.
I liked it a lot. I mean, but I didn't like the story in Hugo so much as I liked what Martin Scorsese, the emotion he put into it from himself, you know, and like the scenes where,
okay,
well, kind of like the story is like, oh, he goes and does this and he finds out this thing and whatever. But you could tell that the guy who is making the movie really identified with this character, and that when he starts learning about the history of silent film, that like, the people making this movie are really excited. Like, it's one of those movies where,
if you cut off the first hour of Hugo, I would like it. If I watched the second hour, I'd be like, oh, this is pretty good.
But it's a movie where, like,
but then you'd have no Jude Law and
Jude Law's,
and no, Ray Winstone, no, would only be a dead body.
You're talking about, what, AI?
No, Hugo.
Hugo? Oh, yeah, that's right. I totally forgot Jude Law and Ray Winstone were in it.
Yeah, they're both in it in the very beginning.
Well, Jude Law's in flashbacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, same with Ray Winstone. Except his dead body.
That's right. His are flashbacks, too. But when they show, it's the kind of movie where when he's learning about old silent film, they show you footage from real old silent films, and they don't have, like, they don't put, like, a silent film filter on footage of, like, Ben Kingsley walking around
Ben
doing
Grimsby,
stuff.
Ben Grimsby, sure.
Ben Grimsby.
It's like,
Krang Mingzi.
It was like when they did, when Frost Nixon came out a year or two ago, and they tried to restage the interviews with the characters from the film, and instead of using actual, like, footage of these people, they put, like, Oliver Platt in his character's makeup.
Yeah,
doing
as if
this
it was
interview.
Yeah, and that
as
was,
if it was actual footage.
And that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I didn't see, like, there was no point to that.
But you liked what they did with Hugo.
Where they used the real old footage.
Yeah.
Guys,
Was it in 3D? I didn't see it in 3D.
It was, and it didn't need to be. That's the thing is, I was...
No, I mean like the old-timey stuff was like the
was
silent
more
film
like,
stuff.
Sort of. It was more like the image came out at you, but it wasn't like, well, we'll take this old Buster Keaton movie and we'll make it into 3D. It was more like as if you were watching a TV and the TV screen was moving towards you.
Okay.
Like, the silent films were not
like
made 3D,
like
but...
in Poltergeist or something, or...?
A little bit.
But I know this is a really important conversation to hash out.
Okay, but, what's up?
I think we can put the Oscars to bed.
Okay, well, we've already put our listeners to bed.
I think we can move on.
Our Hugo cast.
To the...
Are we going to move on to...
To the more important awards.
To the Flop Academy Flop
so,
awards?
Yeah.
Four thumbs up and a boner for the Oscars,
okay,
right?
I guess.
Yeah, was it a good bad Oscars, a bad bad Oscars, or an Oscars you kind of liked a little bit?
A real stroke party, guys.
That would indicate that it was at least fun for one person. And possibly a cat. So, Dan.
Depending on how you do it.
Yeah.
So we're going to give out the floppies. Okay. Most coveted award.
It's in the shape
in
of a golden disc.
Golden disc?
Yeah, like a floppy disc.
Okay.
You're older than me, Dan. You know what a floppy disc is.
Sure. So we all have a few here to give out. Why don't I start off?
Okay.
Okay.
Why don't you start off?
I'm going to give out first award goes to actor that sounds most like an auto part, and that goes to Cam Gajandet, who also received the coveted Shredded Like Lettuce Award and the Josh Hartnett Memorial Award for Most Irritating Squint. So,
wow, so a good year for Cam. Cam really, he really rolled through this year.
Call that a three-peat for Cam.
Strong year for Cam Gajandet.
Mm-hmm.
Gajandet?
Gijande.
Just I kind of want to call into Car Talk now and say that my Cam Gajandet is all out of line.
Frickin' Frack, right?
Those are... the Tapper Brothers. Or Tapit Brothers.
Anyone else? Do we want to rotate?
Sure. We can rotate through.
Sure.
My categories are a little different. I had best audience sympathy role reversal went to Green Lantern for making an audience of nerds root for a handsome jock who was about to beat up a brainiac in a wheelchair.
Okay.
So best audience sympathy role reversal, Green Lantern.
And now being nerds, we really identified with that, right?
I really identified with the horrific villain who's
with
in a wheelchair.
Lumpy, with the big lumpy
with
head.
The gross mustache and the lumpy head.
I think his
head.
Name was Lumpy Head.
I mean, great. A lumpy head. I knew you'd be behind this.
Lumpy head is terrorizing the city.
Where is Green Lantern? Lumpy head is on a rampage.
My first award is for most erotic, fully clothed sexual performance.
Okay.
And it goes to, of course, Nicolas Cage in Drive Angry.
Yeah, it's interesting because Nicolas Cage won for my award for angriest driving for Drive Angry.
Well, I mean, as long as we're giving Nicolas Cage plaudits out.
It's not the only one I have. So.
All right. Well, maybe I'll save it then.
Oh, no, you can go.
I'm going to give the Cagiest Cage Award to Trespass Cage, which for me beat out Sorcerer's Apprentice Cage, Drive Angry Cage, and Season of the Witch Cage.
I gave Best Hair to Nicolas Cage for all of them.
Wow.
Wow. Well, what kind of an award is that? It's a golden disc, right?
Best hair. It's a golden disc, but it has a wig on it. It has a hideous wig on it. So Nicolas Cage for all of them.
My next award is for most believable English accent in a totally terrible movie is a double award to both Danny McBride and James Franco in Your Highness.
Not even a Flophouse movie.
Not a Flophouse movie, just a movie that was from this last year.
And was, I think, drawn for the least fun I had watching a movie all year long.
Wow, what was the other one?
The other one was, wait, let me peruse my notes. Oh shit, I totally forgot to write it down. So Your Highness is alone.
The winner for least fun you had in a movie.
Okay, well...
Actually, I'll give that an award just now for movie that was most sold on the presence of a butt in it. Now, no one's won that award since Entrapment.
Not even a totally nude butt, just a butt and a thong.
Entrapment won it with a butt that was through a pair of pants, so...
I think they tried to do that with that Scottish movie, What's the post-apocalyptic?
Yeah, Macbeth. Yeah, you're not supposed to say.
No, that post-apocalyptic one.
Doomsday. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, that's
well,
right.
I mean, that's
a great butt.
I'll get on board with that one.
It's a butt with an accent.
Officially, the assies aren't announced until next week, so let's stick with the floppies.
So this is the Golden Civ Award for movie I've most completely forgotten that we watched, and that goes to Beastly, which may just be because that was in the blooper episode. But still, almost completely erased from my mind, Eternal Sunshine style. So,
yeah.
Beastly.
Now, for a second, I thought you said Beasley, like
That's
Mrs.
Awesome.
Beasley.
I'd given that award to Skyline.
Oh, yeah. Right. We watched Skyline.
See,
okay,
that's the reaction I was hoping for.
I'm going to have to give it to Skyline also. I kind of forgot that existed. Here's a serious one. For Best Actor, I give it to Gary Oldman. Not for Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, although he's very good in that, but for the moment in Red Riding Hood, when Lucas Haas asks if he can touch Gary Oldman's sword, and Gary Oldman goes, no. As if he's barely thinking about it, and he's already leaving the conversation. No.
He's a real pro.
That was a beautiful moment in a movie. Otherwise, terribly boring, except for the existence of a giant cast iron elephant that people were burned to death in.
Hey guys, I wanna calm things down a little bit and go back to something that we taped earlier in the day. Okay, this is for the Lifetime Achievement Award for longest movie we ever watched for the Flophouse. And that goes to The Happiest Millionaire.
Yeah, well earned. Well earned. It was very long.
Due, I think, is the term. It was due for that award.
I have here the Paul Walker Award for being a black hole of charisma. And that goes for Alex Pettifer, star of I'm Number 4 and Beastly.
He has nothing at all to offer a film. He has no charisma, no star power.
What about abs?
He's shredded like lettuce. Mm-hmm. That's true.
But not as much as Kim Gijande.
Not as good at much as Kam Jagajan Ja. Do you want me to go again?
Sure.
Okay. For best twists, it's Trespass. Oh, wait, no, I read that wrong. I'm sorry. The category is most twists, not best twists, merely most, because there are 8 or 9 twists in that movie.
This is all new to me.
The twists run the gamut from it turns out we have no money to no, we actually do have a lot of money to we want to take your daughter's kidney to we don't want the kidney, just the money. And I didn't get into the affair that Nicole Kidman didn't have.
Yeah. So the last award that I'm going to give out, guys, goes to the Flophouse movie this year that had the least limits, mm-hmm. which is The Roommate.
Wow, a huge upset.
Bradley Cooper is steamed.
He is so unhappy.
Expertly awarded.
I think he was about out of his chair already and
then Billy Zane just pushed him down and got up to accept the award.
Yep,
and while he's up there, he can accept another award, Best Hats. The Roommate special achievement in hats this year.
So this award was given out actually earlier at our Technical Flophouse Awards,
sure.
Hosted by Amanda Bynes. And this is the What If Penny Met a Dinosaur Award for Strangest Premise, and that goes to Gooby, where Robbie Coltrane was a giant living teddy bear. It's the movie that makes you believe in magic and then makes you wish you didn't.
Oh, I wish I'd seen that one. I missed it.
Horrifying.
This is a very contentious category every year. It's going to be a lot of buzz on the blogs afterwards, but whether we chose the right one. Best commercial for TGI Fridays disguised as a movie. And the winner is Zookeeper. Zookeeper.
This is my final award. I don't know. I see you have a couple more left.
I have a couple, but I don't have to announce them all.
This is my final award. The Cold Shower Award goes to Sucker Punch for making me feel guilty about every erection I've ever had.
Sure.
You weren't already guilty about all those erections?
Look, I wasn't raised with a tradition of guilt like you.
No, gelt. It's called gelt. Okay. Chocolate coins that you get at Hanukkah.
I see.
I have a special award, Best Supporting Actor. I'm going to give to Eric Zuckerman for My Soul to Take. Great guy.
Former Flophouse co-host.
Former Flophouse co-host. Eric Zuckerman. Current Flophouse friend, Eric Zuckerman. Great work in your 4 or 5 minutes of screen
Nothing
time.
Nothing but nice things to say about
the
you.
The killer didn't call him bitch at any point, though, right?
No, unfortunately.
That's too bad.
And, of course...
Because that's something you'd want on your tombstone.
Mm-hmm. Pepperoni and extra cheese.
And birch.
And of course, this is the big award, the big one, Best Picture of the Year.
Okay.
Again, a lot of lobbying, a lot of advertising, a lot of things.
I think it's going to The Artist.
The Artist is an early favorite. Oh no, opening the envelope. Who saw this coming? Best Picture goes to Tango and Cash. For the 22nd year running, Tango and Cash has won Best Picture. Well, congratulations to Tango, congratulations to Cash, and let's not forget the late Jack Palance.
Look, the freak from the castle has a brave face on. He was really expecting to make it this year.
I can't see the Invisible Maniac, but I assume he's crying.
Head of the family, I can really see his expression. It's huge. What a disappointment.
Oh, but Tango and Cash couldn't be happier.
Yeah.
Look, there they are. They're high-fived, and now the picture is taken of that, and it's in the newspaper.
And they're cleared.
Cleared of all charges by winning this award.
So we're having a lot of fun, but...
finally, let's end that.
Yeah, let's wrap that up.
Let's move on to letters from listeners.
Flophouse letters. Letters for the Flophouse.
An award for
we're
best
reading
song.
Reading letters. Letters, letters, letters. Flophouse letters.
Okay, so this email is titled Floptacular Predictions.
Oh, okay.
It's from Dan, last name withheld. It says, just
Dan
listen
McCoy?
To last year's Floptacular episode. I've been thinking who you would who would win this year's Lifetime Achievement Award for Things Packed in Twos. I would like to see tennis balls
was
win the
award.
That was an award. I would like to see tennis balls win the award for things packed in threes. I know over the last decade or so they have changed to four packs in some instances, but over the course of history, I've always enjoyed the packaging.
Yeah, but you're supposed to give the award for this year's work,
great
not,
look,
not for lifetime achievement.
Nice cap, fantastic smell after the can is opened. Thanks.
Does he not know what this podcast is about?
He may think it's a tennis cast.
Yeah, has he confused us with the Pete Sampras
packs?
House?
Isn't that the term for when they package two, like, two older porno magazines and then sneak a third one with the cover ripped off
yeah.
in there? Okay.
I was not aware that they did that.
One that
yeah.
one that's, like, something you would not
yeah,
be
like,
interested in.
Like, pregnant babes and stuff yeah. like that. Grannies and whatnot.
Yeah.
Grannies and whatnot. You know what? I think at first I thought it was that there weren't a lot of granny fetishists out there, but now I think it's that we have whatnot in the title of our porn magazine. People just don't know what to expect. Well,
that's the
thing,
you don't know what the title is because the cover's been ripped off.
Well, Jugs and Etc. has been doing pretty good. Well, Etc. means more of the same. Some people know they're getting more Jugs, but whatnot, that could mean anything.
Could be anything.
It's a big question mark. It's like if you put
just
out a porno movie,
pornography.
The title was just question mark. You wouldn't pick that up. You don't know what you're entering into. There could be anything between those covers.
If there's anything
that requires a lot of
years
trust.
In the pornographic industry is that people have very specific fetishes. Things they're into.
And they do not want to be surprised. I don't want to be looking for a picture of an anthropomorphic dolphin having sex with an anthropomorphic fox. Turn the page. There's a granny there. I don't want to grab
completely
bag of
human,
porn.
Shot very photorealistically.
I mean,
this is
granted
why,
anthropomorphic.
This is why our twin experiments, porn grab bag, huge failure, and barely legal and miscellaneous, huge failure. Well, yeah, but that was a way we could use up the pictures that didn't fit in the other magazines. Again, failure. People aren't interested in that. They want to know what they're getting. Here's two words that don't go together, okay? Masturbation and surprise. You don't want to be surprised when you're masturbating, okay?
About to climax.
And shock.
All right, well...
That's why our other magazine, hey, look at this. People didn't even know what tone it was in. Hey, look at this was our second worst selling magazine after question mark.
Yeah, it could be. Hey, look at this. It will disgust you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We have a lot of these conversations.
Often cataloged improperly next to the Rangers Rick and whatnot.
And then we get a lot of angry letters from a lot of angry parents who thought they were buying nature-themed pornography. Rangers Rick.
This email is titled, That Minnesota Guy's Offer is No Good. And this is referring back to a while ago.
To Jesse Ventura?
As a recent flop convert, I've been working my way through your old episodes. When you watched Delgo, you got an email from a listener in Minnesota who offered to let you watch movies at his house.
Oh, yeah.
His house? I can do better than that. I can offer you an entire theater with seats and paying customers, hopefully. Mm-hmm. I am a projectionist at the Trilon Micro Cinema here in Minneapolis.
Wow.
We're a 50-seat nonprofit theater that shows a combination of retrospectives and new independent films. We're also host of such series as Trash Film Debauchery.
That sounds like something you'd like, Dan.
Yes. Yeah. And The Defenders, in which one person picks a critically unloved film and defends it before an audience.
Oh. Sounds like Elliot.
So,
hey, wait a minute.
How yeah. about it, floppers? Care to come to Minnesota and do a live show? I'll cover the theater. You keep the sure-to-be-lucrative box office. To sweeten the deal, I've come up with attractions suited to each of your personalities. Stuart, there's a brewery just two blocks from the theater.
I a like gym that. Brewery. They make gym brewers there.
Elliot.
It's like a frat house, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, kind of.
Elliot, there's a Popeyes nearby.
Interesting.
Plus, Minnesota
Midwestern
has
Popeyes.
A lot of words that sound like other words. Dan, Minnesota's home to racist, homophobic militia nut Michelle Bachmann. So you're sure to fit right in. Ian, last name withheld. Well, I don't like that last part.
It totally fits with your personality, as according to what I said and what Stuart said in this podcast.
Hooks with for hands, right?
Yeah. Does okay. she have hooks for hands? I don't think so.
He can't answer.
Well, I think it sounds pretty good. If he'll cover the cost of travel and lodging,
yeah, that's the
we'll pay for our meals and for our in city transportation.
I'll tell you sure. something. Minneapolis is a lovely city for one third of the year. I lived there briefly. And
no, but seriously, folks.
Yeah.
Well,
I love Minneapolis. I'm just hoping to find Maxiapolis at some point. Very small city. Very small city.
As soon as I can convince you guys to go, I'm down. I'm ready.
Okay. Well, we should hop in our old double side car motorcycle.
So who drives the motorcycle?
I would think Dan would. He's kind of in charge.
Yeah, probably.
And I'm going to be way too drunk to be driving a motorcycle.
You're passed out in the sidecar, and I'm with the other sidecar.
The next email speaks to that very issue. So okay.
let's say to him, make it worth our while, mm-hmm. and we'll go to your 50-seat Minneapolis theater.
Yeah.
And by make it worth our while, I mean pay for our plane tickets.
Maybe we'll pay for it with the box office from all those fans that come out.
Yeah. How much are we going to have to charge for if it's a 50-seat theater?
$10 million.
I don't know.
I'm not very good at math, though.
I don't know math. That's why I got into comedy writing. The glue of the Flophouse is the next email.
Must be about Dan's horse.
The glue of the Flophouse. Dear Flopaholics, for years you guys have been pushing the lie that Dan is the Leonardo of the group, where he is the one who makes sure the discussion stays on topic and keeps everything organized. Yet who is the one who always makes a segue back into the film during a classic Flophouse tangent? Who says, right, when a joke peters off so the discussion can move to a different topic? Who, when gone, the podcast meanders a bit more than usual? That's right, the one and only Stuart Wellington.
Stuart Wellington.
Maybe it's time
fucking
Dan...
Fucking Cyclops over here.
Maybe it's time Dan takes the place as the wacky friend, and Stuart takes his rightful place as the serious leader of the group, if only for one episode, like Freaky Friday or vice versa. At least,
wait,
walking...
we're going to watch vice versa?
No, or like father, like son, or 18 okay. again.
At least walking around in the other one's shoes might stop their constant off-podcast fighting. Remember the immortal words of Shakespeare, to thine own self be true. Sincerely, Brian, last name withheld.
So that would make you the Cyclops, Stuart. Mm-hmm. Dan is certainly not the Wolverine. So what is he, like the Nightcrawler?
Yeah, I mean...
Or the Beast?
Yeah, I think...
I could be the Beast.
Yeah, okay. Beast is pretty cool. Beast is not, like, really cool, but, you know, he'll pass.
Okay, and I assume I'm, like, Banshee?
You're something. You're
what,
you're
Sunspot?
Like Ford,
you're, like Sunspot.
You're Cyclock.
Cyclock. So, the guy was a clock instead of an eye?
How do you pronounce that?
Well, Psylocke?
Yeah,
Psylocke. So I'm the sexy Asian ninja with an English accent?
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
I'm jealous.
It does mean I have a lot more wedgies than most other superheroes.
What, Brian, last name withheld? I disagree with you, sir. I can't handle that responsibility.
Maybe we should try it sometime, though. You never know. You shouldn't doubt yourself.
Okay. So next time, I'll bring all the podcasting equipment, which I'm guessing is, I don't like a tape recorder or something. I don't. And we'll do it at my house later with a bunch of cores. Yep. You'll just meander in probably 10 minutes late. And then go into a long spiel that you've been rehearsing on the whole walkover.
That sometimes goes over and sometimes doesn't make that much sense.
Yeah, of course.
Then you'll finish your own bit by asking us if it was a bit.
It's going to be tough. But I think you can handle it, Dan.
This last one is actually a very touching story. So get ready to touch yourself.
Better not be another.
There's been a lot of talk about masturbating on the show tonight. We need a movie to distract us from masturbating. Some movies distract you the other way.
Wait, what?
Some movies make you do that.
What are you talking about?
Like they force you to, Stuart. Yeah, you have no choice.
Yeah.
Well, like a movie that makes you masturbate.
Yeah.
That's
like The Ring.
You're watching one of those movies like Peter Pan where they're like Tinkerbell's dying. Only masturbating will bring her back to life. Come on, everybody in the audience.
Well, like one of those horror movies where you watch it and it makes you die, you like it makes you kill yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like Ferngully. Yeah.
Okay.
So this is
second
titled...
Ferngully reference of the night.
Thank you, and you're welcome. A Tale of Flophouse Romance.
Well, hello.
First,
this is not another slash fiction story, is it?
That's what I was expecting.
First.
So go on.
I cannot hear another story about me licking Popeye's grease off of either of you ever again.
I just wanted to thank you for putting out the podcast.
Because you're desensitized at this point. It's like you desensitize the tip of your penis and can't get can't read.
Yeah, let him know, Dan. Just read this letter.
Thank you for putting out the podcast, my favorite podcast, etc.
Thank you very much.
Sorry,
fact,
for this episode.
A few weeks ago, I was listening to the Conan episode of the podcast while scanning some
that means
books
with Nan
in the library. A mindless task made bearable only by podcasts. Although I'd listened to this episode two times before, I still found myself nearly doubled over in laughter by the time that Elliot S. Connery finished off the updated Zardoz ad with, "You're the Zardoz now, dog." However,
notice he had to throw in his fucking Connery.
Yeah, I gotta show off.
Unlike most times,
Michael Caine's coming up soon too.
However, unlike most times when I've been in a similar situation, the people around me either ignore my laughter or stare at me like I'm insane. This time I was tapped on the shoulder. I turned around to see a beautiful girl, and instead of asking if I would stop hogging the scanner, she asked what was so funny. Flabbergasted, I told her it was a bad movie podcast that was making fun of Zardoz.
And at this point, I assume she screamed and ran away.
To my further surprise, she asked me if she could hear it, and since I'm an average flop listener and she was gorgeous, I acquiesced immediately and watched as she began laughing at Elliot's horrible impersonation and description of what actually happens in Zardoz.
Horrible.
After she handed
I studied with Sean Connery for years.
After she handed my iPod back to me, we began talking about other bad movies we both liked, and both realized that we didn't have any friends that wanted to go to a midnight showing of The Room later that week. Not wanting to let this opportunity get away from me, I asked her out for dinner and The Room, and I'm happy to report that we've been on a number of dates since then, during which I've gotten her to become a new subscriber to your podcast. So I
That's
just wanted to say
part.
Thank you for enabling a chance to meet my new girlfriend, and you're welcome for swelling your subscriber rolls by one. Keep on flopping in the free world. Mike, last name withheld. P.S. Is there any chance for a live Flophouse event in Washington, D.C.? I know Elliot considers our city a boring eyesore, as
when
heard
in
the
that?
Invasion episode.
When did I say that? I
apparently
like
in the Invasion episode.
I guess so. Well, it is boring, but I like the public statuary.
But our population is about 83% students who love bad movies. When I went to D.C. recently, I was struck by how lovely our
I actually like a lot of the things. And maybe it was just that Invasion showed the more boring parts of the city, like the malls and things. Or not malls, but, you know, the office buildings.
The malls of America that they have.
That was a touching story. That was really great.
I mean, I'm sure they're broken up by now.
Oh, that's terrible, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Just look.
Thanks
I mean,
for nothing. Well, that's – I'm very glad that we could help in some way to get this young Flophouse listener – some affection.
Mm-hmm. And, like a modern-day Cyrano.
Yep. Yeah. A modern-day Cyrano.
Basically, what, Steve Martin?
Someday we'll work up to be Renault or a Renault.
I mean, if we can, you know, if we can...
Yeah, Steve Martin, basically, yeah.
If we can get one nerd laid out there, then it's all been worth
it. Then the past few years of doing this podcast are worth it. And and thanks for giving us another listener. And I feel like a live event in D.C. is eminently more doable than Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Because we could just take a train down there.
I agree.
And that's how they make honey.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
So we should now go on to...
Bees, really?
Yeah, it's made with bees.
No kidding.
It's all bees and beeswax.
This is a joke
funny,
that
huh?
You're going to cut out.
It's
so.
Not going to play on the air because the whole point was I stopped the tape to save it. And
but
then,
you're explaining it now, so
well, we
it's
can,
in there.
We can pick up from where we left off then. Okay. Well, like I think we could Washington, D.C. screening would be eminently doable. If someone in Washington, D.C. wants to do some of the legwork and figure out where that could be done, then that would be a cool thing to do.
Yeah. And if this relationship survives a little longer too, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, wait, you'd love to
wait,
hear the
what?
Relationship?
No, I want to make sure that
you are sick. So yeah. You heard him, Flophouse fans. Make a tape of you having sex and send it to Pervazoid number one, Dan McCoy.
Mister, your girlfriend's butt looks nice, McCoy.
Wife. Your wife's butt looks nice.
I was going through our old...
You didn't like his girlfriend's butt, is what you're saying.
No, yeah, just, what's wrong with his girlfriend's butt, Dan?
Oh, God. I just want my cynicism to not be borne out.
I was
know
going through
whether this
the previous, whether
this relationship survives.
That's I was sure. going through the previous year's Flophouse episodes in preparation for this, and I went back and listened to the controversy over the you asking if that was the guy's wife in the video.
Look, people want to know.
People named Dan McCoy who are pervs want to know.
I'm a person. You're taking that away from me, Elliot? Are you dehumanizing me?
Only in that you're a pervozoid. A robot cyborg designed to be a perv.
He's a three-dimensional pervozoid.
Of being a human, Elliot. Just because you're uncomfortable with it doesn't mean that it's not a valid...
I'm totally comfortable with it.
Yeah.
So send in that tape.
Popeye's grease off anybody's hands.
But we hope you're still together and keep on rocking in DC.
Okay.
So this is the part where we normally make recommendations, but because this is sort of a end of the year retrospective, I thought
the same place everyone does their end of the year retrospectives in February. On Leap Day.
On Leap Day.
It's not miles off. I mean, some people do it on in January. After the year is actually over, rather than trying to jump the gun and do it in December like everyone else.
Wow, you really thought about this. It really makes you mad.
But we should talk about a couple movies maybe from the last year that we enjoyed. And we don't need to do maybe full recommendations. We can just rattle off a couple.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
But Elliot, why don't you go?
Why don't you go? That reminds me of a movie I really enjoyed this year. A little movie called Hugo. You, Dan?
All right, man, I'm just going to go off into the other room and
I saw a lot fewer new movies this year than I usually do. And I think just because it was a busy year and there wasn't a lot in the theaters that was like really driving me to go see it right away.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I don't have a lot to recommend that are not already well-known movies. Like I wish there was some like indie movie or foreign movie I saw that really... was really amazing, and I want to tell everyone about it, but I didn't. But speaking of driving me to the theaters to see stuff, here's another movie I liked this year, Drive.
Okay.
It's a really good segue. So much better than what I got prepared.
Well, let's hear it, Stuart.
I have a pretty short list because I think I'm in the same boat as Elliot. I just didn't get out. To the theaters as often.
I was going through my list. I keep a list every year of the movies I've seen that year, and I saw way more movies for the Flophouse than I did, like, in the theaters, I wanted to see,
there was two big budget movies that I thought were really good at what they were trying to do, and that was
Transformers 3,
Girl with a Dragon Tattoo,
mm-hmm.
Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which in a way kind of both remind me of each other. Like they were both very, very good at being either an action movie or a thriller, and I think all the elements kind of combined in all those movies. Like the sound was great. The direction was great, and I think in both cases it was primarily due to a great director.
And Mission Impossible had a good script. Like, it was a pretty tight, quick-moving script.
There's a couple laggy parts, but I'd agree with you.
I'm just going to quickly run down, several that
speaking of running down, The Rundown.
With Sean William Scott.
With Sean William Scott, and who was it, The Rock?
Yeah.
Didn't even come out this past year.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Speaking of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Journey 2... The Mysterious Island.
Okay. I'm just going to run down... I have more on here, but you know what? I'm just going to run down a few that I feel were underseen or slightly underappreciated.
Hmm.
In that category, I would put...
Burlesque?
I would put Win-Win, Super 8, Attack the Block, the Fright Night remake I enjoyed, Red State, and The Adventures of Tintin.
You should have said
Tantan.
Tantan. What is that? Like a tauntaun?
I actually said it correctly. I mean, like, that was not what people were making fun of me for.
Tintin? Okay. Like
Tintin.
A Tintin? The guy Daniel Craig.
No.
Daniel Craig's character in Dreamhouse.
This is actually the eye sound that I'm making. But
you should have said Win-Win, Tintin, and then come up with another movie that rhymes with those.
Yeah.
I forgot that I saw Attack the Block this year, actually, and I really liked that a lot.
But do you have something else?
The other one, I mean, basically the movies that stuck with me, aside from Attack the Block, that I saw this year were just like all big movies. Hugo, Drive, Tree of Life, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and Midnight in Paris, which I did not expect to really stick in my mind. Like watching it seemed like it was kind of like a lark. Like, all right, that was fun, but it really like I really felt it for a long time after I saw it in a way I hadn't expected from a Woody Allen movie in a long time, you know?
Did you list young adult?
I didn't read everything that I had written down here originally because I thought I would stick to things that were underseen or underappreciated. But I will say that I liked the things that Elliot said. I also enjoyed
Tantan,
Thor, The Descendants, The Muppets, Young Adult, and I agree with you on Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
I liked some of those, but like Thor was like, okay.
Well, but Thor, I think, was, to me, like, of the, I know that you really liked the X-Men movie.
Yeah, I liked X-Men First Class the most of the superhero movies.
I think of the,
what a fucking turd.
Of the superhero movies I saw this year, I enjoyed Thor the most.
Yeah, I would probably say the movie that you guys didn't list, unsurprisingly, is...
Bucky Larson?
No. I think probably for a lower budget movie, my favorite movie of the year would probably go to Black Death with Sean Bean.
Well, I haven't seen that one.
Which is manages to be both grim and interesting at the same time, whereas too many movies like The Seasons of the Witch and whatnot are very grim and humorless, and just you lose your interest. Well, it completely loses your interest. Whereas Black Death, for whatever reason, probably in part because Sean Bean was great in it, just kept me watching.
Good actor, good Bean.
Yeah, you know,
top quality Bean. I think for me, there's a lot of the movies that
I like. The Frida Pinto Bean in Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Really? Because she was kind of not necessary at any point in that movie.
Really, if anyone had the word pinto in them.
It really, the, go there, the only problem I had with Rise of the Planet of the Apes was that...
The Andy Serkis bean?
The human bean. The
Andy Serkis peanut, you mean.
Oh, man.
Well, it should
we
get...
We do have fun here.
Oh, we certainly do. The listeners don't, but the only problem I had with Rise of the Planet of the Apes was that neighbor
who would stab people in the chest with his finger.
His whole purpose was just to get mad at people and eventually spread the disease that destroyed the world. Spoiler alert. But there's the part where the scientist who works with James Franco, who has come down with this disease where like blood is pouring down his face, is banging on the door trying to get James Franco's attention. And the neighbor walks over and is like, "Hey, what are you doing here? Hey, I'm talking. Get out of here." And it's like, at a certain point, you really can't complain about someone knocking on the door of your neighbor's house. Like, at that, they just needed him to come into contact with that guy so badly. So they're like, well, I guess his character's just got to be a total asshole to everybody.
The thing about a neighbor character in a movie is their main job should be to undress in front of open windows. Yeah. I think Dan can agree with me on this.
If Body Double has taught me anything, that's what it's taught me.
But the movies that struck me this year, a lot of them were movies that either were people working in relatively new people working in a medium they weren't used to, like Brad Bird working in live action, but also things like movies that just kind of felt personal to people making them. Tree of Life felt that way. Hugo felt that way. Midnight in Paris felt that way to me, like, as opposed to movies that were just kind of by the numbers or felt like they could have been made by anybody.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Well, guys, another year. Another year is kind of gone. We're another year older.
Yeah, closer to death.
I gotta do a quick plug before we wrap up.
And I have a plug, too.
March 8th,
you're going to have
to
edit this episode down, Dan.
If you guys will listen to this before March 8th in Brooklyn, New York, Charlene's Bar, 353 Flatbush Avenue, we have a Purim party. To all you non-Jews, that's a costume party. Come on down. You don't have to be in a costume, but you should be. There's going to be an acoustic metal band playing a original song for Purim. There's going to be hamantash and cookies and all kinds of stuff. And raffles and cool prizes. And possibly the three of us. At least me.
Almost definitely. I should be there. And my film screening series, Closely Watched Films, is coming to a close. There'll be, by the time this episode goes up, there will be one screening left, which will be the first Thursday in April. I'm going to be showing the movie The Good Fairy, which was one of the movies Preston Sturges wrote before he started directing movies. It's a very funny movie and just kind of like a light, very graceful kind of comedy the way they used to do in the 30s. And I'll be joined by guest John Oliver of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and afterwards we'll talk about comedy and that movie, and then I'll say farewell to my screening series for the foreseeable future. So that's the first Thursday in April, 7:30 p.m., 92i Tribeca, which is on 200 Hudson Street in Manhattan.
All right, guys. Well, now that all the awards have been given out, all there remains to say is good night, guys.
And good luck, or?
No, just good night.
Oh, okay.
And good luck, right?
No, just good night.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
I've been Dan McCoy.
I think I'm still Elliot Kalin, but I'm kind of tired.
Good night.
Yeah, but talking into a microphone, I'm probably the least experienced.
Oh, yeah, maybe. That's true.
Just trying to
make because you were in that 80s hair metal band.
Yeah. And, of course, Dan...
Elliot and Motley Crue, I believe, was the name of the band.
Dan has to testify in so many trials. Elliot and Motley Crue, they kicked me out, assholes.
Yeah, they said you partied too much.
They said it was too hardcore for them. Yeah, I was too much of a wild man.
You had too much hepatitis.